The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Well, good day, everyone. Welcome to the Bible Shots again for another term. Like I said, I'm Lachlan. Great that you can be along here as we continue working our way through the story of Jesus told by Matthew. But before we get into that, just because we've had our Easter break, did anyone get to make it to the Easter show this year? Anyone? No one here? People have been to the Easter show before, though. Yes, okay, we're all sort of familiar. In case you haven't been, or you know, you're a visitor to Sydney, the Easter show, it's when the country comes to the city. You know, so we have the animals that are there. There's sort of nice quaint competitions like the wood shop, which if I go, you know, it's always great to sit down and see guys going at a piece of wood with axes. It's always entertaining. And of course, every child in Sydney's favourite part of the Easter show, the show bag pavilion. Every child in Sydney looks forward to the show bags. I remember my very first Easter show when I must have been about five. I was given a 2-show bag limit, and I remember in the week leading up to our trip poring over the show bag guide, trying to figure out exactly which bags I was going to get to, you know, maximize the enjoyment out of my 2-show bags. I can't remember what one of them was, but one of them was the Inspector Gadget show bag. And I remember being really pumped about it. You know, I loved Inspector Gadget. Just the names of everything, the list of everything that was in the show bag got me really excited. But of course, when I got to the show and opened up the bag, it didn't take me long to realize that it was just full of, well, let's just say subpar manufacturing products. Some stuff broke before I left the show that day. Some stuff had broken before the end of the week. And even the things that didn't break, by the end of that week, it was sitting on my shelf, gathering dust. No one was interested in actually playing with it and making the most out of it. You see, us here, we're grown-ups. We've been to the show enough times. We've got enough of an idea to sort of say, yeah, I know what the deal with show bags is. If I'm buying a show bag, I don't expect it to be stuff that will last. I don't expect it to be really high-quality products. And I've been speaking to some people who are older and wiser than me over the course of the week, and one of the things that they said that stuck with me has been, you know, actually the older you get, the more you realise is most things in life are like the junk you find in show bags. Ultimately, all the good things of this world are kind of like the junk that you find in show bags. This year at Bible Shops, we've been working our way through the story of Jesus, his life and his teaching, recorded by Matthew, one of his followers. And the last few times we've met, we've been working our way through a talk that Jesus gave about the kingdom of God to his followers and a crowd of people who were listening. They were listening and thinking about who Jesus is and what he said, and that was the audience. So, you know, whether you're a Christian here today or someone who's just thinking about who Jesus is and what he's taught, Jesus has given this talk with both groups in mind. And I think over this week and next week, we're going to see that Jesus wants us to see that all the treasures on earth, well, they're kind of like show bags. They're prone to breakdown, to consumption, and theft. And so Jesus wants us to think hard about what we treasure, because it shows who we love and who our boss really is. He wants us to see that what you love will shape your actions. It's kind of like when you've got two people who fall in love, when they start dating. When two people start dating and they start hanging out a few times, it's not too serious, but as it moves into a more serious relationship, well, they start doing things to impress the other. They find out what the other person likes, and they'll change their behaviour accordingly. So a few years ago, when I started going out with a girl, she was really into musicals and particularly loved Wicked, so I went and found the Wicked playlist on Spotify and started listening to it just to find out, you know, what is it that she loves so much about it. You see, who you love, it shapes how you invest your time, your money, and your energy. It shows what you really treasure, and it shows who your real boss is. So Jesus, he wants us to think hard about what we treasure, because it shows. It shows us who we love and who our real boss is. So let's have a look at the first part of today's passage. It's on the inside of your program that was on your seat when you came in. Starting at verse 19, small number 19. So Jesus, he says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." So notice a couple of things there. So Jesus says there's two places for you to store up wealth. You can store it on earth or in heaven. Now, it's easy to think that Jesus is against his followers being rich. Jesus is against treasure. But actually, that's not quite right. Jesus says, store up treasure to his followers. But the difference is, where do you store it and what are the consequences? The difference is all about security. It's about what will last. Jesus wants his followers to be rich, but he wants them to have lasting wealth. So even if you don't believe in heaven, it's easy to see that treasure in this world doesn't last. A little while ago, my housemates and I had a pantry moth infestation. I had a well-stocked cupboard, you know, nicely ordered, but the pantry moths got in and it all had to be chucked out. My plans to have a nice, well-ordered cupboard for making meals thwarted. I had a shirt this morning which I left in the office and forgot to bring. It's a nice shirt. It's expensive, or at least more expensive than I would usually spend on a business shirt. And one day I pulled it out of the washing machine and noticed there were water stains all over it, which no matter how much Febreze I've put on, no matter how many times I've put it in the washing machine, I just can't seem to clean it. Someone this morning sent me a lovely text to say, here's a website you can go to that will tell you how to sort out that problem, which kind of ruined the illustration, but you get the point. Our clothes get ruined. My old car was a 2003 Kia Rio. Not that glamorous. I thought, I'm not going to invest in an expensive car. You know, I can get by with a Kia Rio. But even then, one day I came back home from work. I went back to the station car park where I'd parked it, and someone had stolen the wheel off the rear driver's side door and left the car sitting on its axle. You know, even when you try not to invest in, you know, really nice things, they still don't last. People still steal from them. It just thwarted again. And that's Jesus' point. Worldly treasure is insecure. You know, it disappears. It gets consumed or destroyed by vermin. It gets water damaged. It gets stolen. You always need more because it's always running out. And that cuts across society. Whether you're rich or poor, whether you tend to be a bit of a hoarder or you tend to be a bit of a minimalist, if you're treasuring stuff in this world, it's insecure. Furthermore, even if you do have stuff that does outlast you, it actually hasn't helped with your big problem. It hasn't helped you with the fact that you're still going to die. The best that treasure in this world can do is make your trip to the grave just that little bit more comfortable, or that little bit more glamorous, or maybe that little bit more exciting. But Jesus, he has an alternative. He says, store up for yourself treasure in heaven. It's the opposite of treasure on earth. See, where worldly treasure is insecure, can be eaten, broken, stolen, and you always need more, treasure in heaven is the opposite. It is secure. Store your treasure in heaven, Jesus says. Now, you might like to ask a bit more about storing up treasure in heaven in question time, but I think at its heart, it's about making your relationship with God your highest priority, loving God with all your heart. And if that's the attitude you take, then your treasure will be secure because, well, God, he's not subject to the ebb and flow of market forces. He's not subject to pantry moth infestations. He's not going to be damaged by water or theft. God's eternal. And when the treasure of this world can, at best, just make your trip to the grave a little bit more comfortable, Well, actually, a solid relationship with God will take you through the grave and into eternal life with Him. Why treasure something that won't satisfy? Why treasure something that at best can make your trip to the grave just a little bit more comfortable? And so Jesus warns the people who are listening to him, look, whatever your treasure is, don't fool yourself about who your real boss is, because it's going to impact your whole life. I think that's what he's getting at there in verse 22. Have a look at the next section. He says, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? It's kind of a proverbial saying, and sometimes when Jesus throws out proverbs, we kind of read them today and go, huh? Or at least I do. And I think it's a little bit strange for a couple of reasons. So one, Jesus kind of says it and it sits there. He doesn't tell us how it relates to what's come before or what's come after, and we're left to kind of ponder it and think, oh, how does that relate? But also because it kind of depends on an ancient understanding of how the eye worked, which is a little bit different to how we understand the eye to work now. So I think there's actually a few things going on in this proverb, and I don't have time to talk about all of them, so feel free to ask more in question time if you'd like. But I think one of the senses of it is, which is important for us to get, is do you know what's in your blind spot? So to keep up the eye illustration, you might know what a blind spot test is, where they have a little cross and a little circle, and the idea is you cover up one of your eyes, and as you move them closer to you, you keep your left eye, if you've got your right eye covered up, focused on the cross, and then at some point the dot will disappear, and that is because it's sitting where your blind spot is, and you can't see it. And I think one of the points Jesus is making is that if you're focused on the things of the world, then actually your real master might have moved into your blind spot. You might not realise who it is that you're actually serving. When we focus on treasures of this world, our real boss falls into our blind spot. He disappears from vision. And even if you think you're following God, if you think you're following Jesus, we might have lost sight of who our real boss is. And it's a problem we need to address again and again and again. I think it's one of the reasons why Jesus and the apostles in the rest of the New Testament talk about money so much. Jesus is asking us, are you aware of what you really love? Are you aware of what's controlling your life? And Jesus is saying, look, the way to have riches that last isn't to focus on the things of this world that pass away, but to focus on God who lasts. When I finished uni, my first job out of uni was as an intern. I was working as a psych intern down at a drug rehab centre. I knew it was going to be a challenging job and a stretching one, and it would give me good skills as well for my working life as a psychologist. But on the downside, it was an unpaid role. So I actually had to also keep my job from uni at Kmart. One of the side effects was this actually meant I had two bosses. And of course, sooner or later, that brought out conflict. I'm only one person. I can't be in two places at once. I had to decide which one was my primary focus. Now, on the one hand, you might say, well, it's easy. You pick the one that's your career that you've trained for. But, it was a difficult job. It was really draining. And I had this powerful urge to eat. Which one becomes your priority? And I understand that it's actually not that uncommon today for people, even within one company, to have multiple bosses. A writer for the Harvard Business Review, Amy Gallo, she's written, more and more people report that they have more than one boss. She pulls together a bunch of findings from different professors, and she says, actually, a couple of the common difficulties people face are conflicting messages and loyalty. So conflicting messages where, boss A tells you to do one thing and boss B tells you to do the opposite because they just have different agendas. Or loyalty, you know, some bosses expect that you will be prioritizing them first and foremost. And if you have multiple bosses and both expect you to have that attitude of them, well, it's going to cause problems. And so, perhaps not surprisingly, she says, one of the solutions in the literature is you need to know who your ultimate boss is. She says, while you may have multiple managers that you take direction from, most people have only one person who's ultimately responsible for their career. When you enter a situation where you work for more than one person, be sure to ask lots of questions about the reporting structure. Who completes your reviews? Who contributes to them? Who makes decisions about your compensation and promotions? And while it may seem mercenary, it's important to know from the outset who can help and who can hurt your career. And I think that's Jesus' big conclusion there in verse 24. He says, no one can serve two masters. Either you'll hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You can't serve both God and money. That word translated money, it could also be translated as a different word, mammon. It's kind of like a personification of greed, I guess. So this is a painting by a man named George Frederick Watts from 1885. It's on display in the Tate Museum or the Tate Gallery in London. You can see that kind of picture of mammon. You know, he's, you know, dressed in opulent clothes there for the time. He's got sort of a crown on his head there. And we know those sorts of images as well, you know, from a more contemporary newspaper sort of drawing, that sort of greed type figure. And we know those characters from fiction as well, the Ebenezer Scrooge or, of course, the Montgomery Burns. But it doesn't take much to dig around and find real examples of people who've let greed get the better of them. At the start of the year, Matt Perrin, who was the former CEO of Billabong, was jailed for 9 years on 12 charges of forgery and fraud. The forgeries allowed him to pocket $13.5 million in loans secured against his wife's Gold Coast house. The judge said that Perrin was motivated by greed, that he turned to criminal activities to stay afloat, and he gambled on being able to trade out and abused the trust of his wife and family. We know what greed is when we see it, don't we? But remember, Jesus, he's not speaking to a group of Ebenezer Scrooges. He's speaking to people from the general population. He's speaking to his followers. The ones we've met so far, they're just a group of fishermen. Most of the people who he's talking to are probably all Jews who would have said, yeah, loving God with all your heart is really important. They're not the Jewish aristocracy. It's a problem that anyone can fall into. Whatever your job, whatever your age, whatever your stage or socioeconomic background, all of us can find ourselves serving money. I don't think anyone sets out to become a servant of money. It just sort of happens by degrees. Most of us think money's serving us, but little by little it becomes clear that it's the other way around. You know, we focus more and more on life being just about the nicer things because, you know, Mammon, Scrooge, Burns, Perrin, none of them are people we look at and think, yes, that's who I want to be like. But that's not the image that Mammon actually puts forward to us. You know, it's easy to see the image that Mammon sells. You just need to look at any sort of advertising space around the city. Nice food, fancy clothes, nice car, and think, yeah, that is it. That is what life is all about. And you know, like the guy who listens to the Wicked soundtrack just to impress the girl he's dating, the thing that you love will be shown by what you treasure. It'll show you who your master really is. But Jesus says, in the light of eternity, all this stuff is fodder. It's like junk from an Easter show bag. It's stuff that's going to wear out, get consumed, and be at risk of theft. But if Mammon promises to make us rich, God promises to outdo him. God is lavishly generous and promises real riches that won't perish, spoil, or fade. because they're in heaven, because it's a relationship with God. And you know what? I actually think this way of seeing things is it's quite freeing as well. You know, things go wrong that are out of your control and you miss out on the good things of life. Sick family members can mean an extra drain of your resources. A crisis at work might mean you don't get to go on that holiday that you wanted to go on. You know, if Jesus is right, you can say, well, it's disappointing, but it's okay. It's not the end of the world because, you know, the nice clothes, the car, the holiday, there's more to life than that. We can miss out and know that that's all right. That's not what life is all about. And so I think Jesus has two big challenges for us as we look at this passage today. The first challenge is to actually be a bit reflective about who your boss really is. Is it someone who can satisfy? Can they offer something that won't perish, spoil, or fade? Or are they peddling trinkets that in the end are as good as the junk you find in a show bag? If you're the reflective sort, later on you might want to have a bit of a think about who your real master is. You know, what motivates your decisions? What do you turn to for comfort when things go south? The second challenge is chase real riches. Don't stop trying to be rich, but instead recognize where there's something of lasting value and chase that instead.
A lot of us have a car, need somewhere to live, all those things. How can you tell what you actually treasure? How do you tell that?
Yeah, how do you tell what you're actually treasuring? I think there's a few different ways. So, I mentioned a couple of possible ideas just at the end there that you might like to reflect on what sort of things motivate your decisions and why. What you turn to for comfort when things go south. What do you daydream of and think that's what will make life better? So I think that that's potentially a few things, but it's not wrong to have a car. It's not wrong to have a good job. It's not wrong to have a house. I think what Jesus is pointing us towards is that actually there is more to life than those things. And so to be driven by them, to be chasing after them as if that's all there is, it's a missed view of life. And so I think if you're a follower of Jesus, you can stop and sit back and think, well, okay, maybe I do need to get a new car, but I don't need to get the most expensive car that I'm able. I could get by with something more modest. I don't need to...
A
2003 Kia Rio.
That's down the food chain.
Right.
Especially if it's got three wheels.
It's true.
Well, that probably wouldn't have affected the performance much. Any other questions, folks? Thoughts?
Yeah, yep. So, yeah, so...
So the
ancient sort of way of understanding the eye was it's a little bit more like the eye takes light in and then gives light to the body to act. So the illustration I was thinking of, that it's almost being a little bit like a submarine. So, you know, if you were in a submarine... No, there's no submariners here, are there? Excellent, good. You're all kind of going off TV and movies like me, so we'll all kind of assume that, you know, it's right. So it's what I imagine life on a submarine is like. You know, if your submarine's underwater and pops the periscope up and is able to kind of look around, and it lets in a bit of light, and from what you see, you go, okay, that's how everyone in the submarine is going to act. So I think it's more that kind of idea is sort of closer to what the ancient world would say the eye kind of works. We've sort of got more of a scientific idea about light reflection and things like that. So, yep. But so with that there's kind of, again, that I think this is one of the ideas that Jesus might be getting at in there. If you're in sort of the submarine and the periscope pops up, if you're sort of thinking, oh, there's the friendly resupply ship on the horizon, great, we can surface and say, hey guys, we're over here, but you haven't done a full sweep and seen, oh, there's an enemy battle cruiser 500 meters away, well, you're not going to be acting in light of the situation. You've missed important information there. And I think that's something that he's getting at as well. If you have just focused on the things of this world, you've missed out on the important reality of actually you need to focus on God first. And when you focus on God, that actually gives you a framework to think rightly about possessions. Because it's not bad to have stuff. Jesus is not anti-stuff. He's not saying rich bad, poor good. He's saying actually think about what you have and how you use it.
Okay. Well, yes, sir.
Yeah, Andrew. Yeah.
Mm. So what does he say that that is? Focus on God and build up heavenly truth.
Yeah, so I think that's what he gets to. So it's a good question.
Your mission is to repeat the question.
My mission is to repeat the question. Thanks, Al. Usually I'm the one who's saying that. So so the question was, so correct me if I'm wrong, Andrew, it's what does Jesus say life is all about, and what does storing up heavenly treasure look like? That's sort of the guts of what the question is. Yep. So
more so is the focus of life to build up those heavenly treasures as opposed to, you know, any earthly treasures?
Yeah. Is the focus of life to build up heavenly treasures, not earthly treasures? Yeah, I think that's one of the things he's saying, which then segues into the question of, well, what is heavenly treasure? Part of the answer to that is, come back next week, because that is the natural question that flows out of what Jesus had said so far. But I think even in this passage, we see Jesus is kind of constructing it so we see actually the real thing to treasure is a relationship with God. So when we think about storing up treasure, treasure is just stuff. So we think, you know, if I was storing up treasure, I'd, you know, maybe go and put gold bar in the bank or a safe or something. That's what storing up treasure looks like. But what would it look like in a relational model? What would it look like if someone said, store up treasure with your family? Well, you go, that's actually got more of a relational focus. And as the passage shifts on, by the end, it's relational. He's saying, who's your master? Is it God or is it mammon? Is it money? And so it shifts into a more personal kind of thing. So I think Jesus is pushing us towards seeing that real treasure is actually having a relationship with God. And the reason it's real treasure is because if you've got a relationship with God, actually even when you die, you know you've got eternity in heaven with God. And we can be certain about that because of Jesus' resurrection.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.